From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet. Happy birthday, by the way, to Coast listener Barbara in Redlands, California. Hope you have a great one, Barb. Here's what's happening. An Air Force base in Texas is getting ready to test its infrastructure against an electromagnetic pulse, or EMP, an attack, and needs to do preliminary site surveys to design future tests. Now, this is something we've been talking about for years. The officials at the Joint Base in San Antonio and Lackland, Texas, issued a request for quotes for an EMP-tailored survey of what is called the Petroleum Oil and Lubrication Complex, which consists of multiple buildings in two areas of the base connected by an underground pipeline. The Air Force is conducting this test and others in adherence with the Trump-era executive order requiring the military and key agencies involved in securing critical infrastructures to put more resources into defending against EMP attacks in which an electromagnetic wave could potentially knock out all electronic components in its wake and, of course, including the power grid. House Democrats passed a nearly $2 trillion coronavirus relief package on a mostly party-line vote Saturday, sending the massive package now to the Senate as lawmakers rush to provide a fresh round of aid before key unemployment programs expire. The Senate could move as quickly as this week to pass its own version of the bill, which will look slightly different from the House proposal, most notably including the $15 minimum wage increase after the parliamentarian ruled that its inclusion violates budget rules. Bitcoin rose nearly 7% on Monday as GRIS assets rallied after last week's bond route cooled, with Citibank saying that the most popular cryptocurrency was at a tipping point and could become the preferred currency for international trade. Let's check in with our expert on the internet and technology, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, I still don't get Bitcoin, but they're moving ahead with this stuff.
Yeah, well, to roughly paraphrase Obi-Wan, the hype is strong with Bitcoin. And, this is just one reason. I don't deal with Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrencies. So it seems like this latest round of breathless promotion for Bitcoin is apparently being triggered by Musk's Tesla buying a big chunk of it, which, of course, says nothing about its viability because Musk himself is a master of hype. But perhaps more to the point, the volatility of Bitcoin remains immense. Keep in mind, as you mentioned last week, it dropped 23%. So the 7% gain today has to be referenced against the 23% drop then. Now, we're hearing about this tipping point, inflection point stuff now, and while boosters will say, well, the inflection will be positive, it could very well be negative. And there are other factors that could line up here also that could affect any rosy predictions. One thing is that national governments are lining up thinking about ways they can regulate Bitcoin, which is logical because they don't want to see the same kind of abuses occur with Bitcoin or other cyber currencies as occur with traditional currencies. And another thing to keep in mind is the amount of electricity being used to create Bitcoins. It keeps going up because you need more and more computers churning through the algorithm to mine each Bitcoin. Already, the electricity devoted to this is 121 terawatt hours. That's terawatts, trillions of watt hours per year, or more than the total electricity used annually by the entire country of Argentina. That's still going up. And most of this is apparently not coming from renewable sources like hydro or solar. Mostly, it's reportedly coal and oil and natural gas-based electricity. Once you use that, those resources, they're gone. And this impacts the electricity availability and costs for everyone else. And as the price goes up of Bitcoin, there's incentive for more and more Bitcoin mining, uses more and more electricity. And there's an irony about this relating to Tesla in particular, because they're supposed to be this environmentally friendly company, and they haven't been shy, apparently, about accepting environmental tax credits. And here they are buying up a big batch of Bitcoin that typically has notable negative environmental impact due to the electricity use that it requires.
Interesting.
So really, overall, we're pretty much back to where we always seem to end up with this topic, which is if you don't have money, you're not willing and able to chance having flushed down the tubes, you might want to consider putting it somewhere else.
It would take you what to get you to buy Bitcoin? Anything?
It's impossible. It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. All right. Well, thanks. We'll talk to you next week. How many servings of fruits and veggies should you be getting each day to live a longer life? A new study published in Circulation, the Journal of the American Heart Association, aims to provide this answer. In an analysis of data representing some 2 million people around the world, researchers identified 5 daily servings of fruits and veggies, 2 servings of fruit, 3 of vegetables, to be exact, as the ideal ratio to live a longer life. Just remember that. A couple servings of fruit and 3 of veggies every day to live a longer life. A swarm of locusts flying through Saudi Arabia as stunned people stare and watch and record on their phones. The desert locust has been active since 2020 following a period of really wet weather. They say this could be the beginning of the apocalypse. What's going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Well, we just had a great full moon, Stephen, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely, George. And I'm sitting here in my home in Phoenix watching this waning moon. Just beautiful. But we begin with space, George, and as we many obviously people know out there, the Mars 2020 Perseverance rover continues to excite NASA, the JPL team, and millions around the world. And here's some interesting information, too. The images of the descent stage with its parachute were amazing, too. Little known to the public, George, at the time was a secret embroidered in the 70-foot parachute, which inflated at nearly Mach 2. JPL Systems engineers came up with a unique binary code encoded around it and within the nylon and Kevlar parachute material. And the mission theme on the parachute, George, in binary code said, "Dare mighty things," taken from a Teddy Roosevelt speech and also the motto, that is, of JPL. And also included in the parachute's binary code are the GPS coordinates of the JPL facility in Pasadena, California. Engineers at JPL sometimes, George, leave some embedded messages on these types of missions. And some young engineering students were the ones who actually figured that out. Kudos to them. We move on to astronomy. Cygnus X-1, George, was the first black hole ever discovered back in 1964 by the detection of its powerful X-ray emissions. The binary star is made up of a large supergiant star orbiting what appears to be the black hole in a 5.5-day orbit. But the black hole, George, pulls material off the supergiant star and is some 7,000 light years from the Earth. Now scientists say that this black hole is more massive than previously thought, 21 times the mass of the sun, making it one of the most massive ever found. George, here's some interesting space news. Asteroid Apophis, named, of course, after the Egyptian war god, the 1,200-foot large object, actually passes the Earth again on March the 5th, get a load of this, at 8:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, at the very safe distance of 11 million miles. But many around the world are going to radar image it, and it sets it up for that very close encounter on April the 13th of 2029, when it comes within 19,000 miles of the Earth.
That's too close.
It's totally amazing. We wrap it up with the live sky, George. Welcome, everyone, to March 2021, a long month with some great views of the sky. As you mentioned, George, the moon now past full, last quarter on the 6th of March, new moon on the 13th, and the next full moon gets set for this, folks, March the 28th, the first supermoon officially of 2021, called the full worm moon on the 28th. But in a more spiritual way, it's also known as the full paschal moon, as the season of Passover and Easter, of course, begin around then, with Easter on April the 4th. This particular story continues. The first Sunday after the first full moon, after the vernal equinox, is usually how we mark the date of Easter. Mars and the Pleiades star cluster, George, are within 2.6 degrees on the 4th in the evening sky. But in the morning, Mercury is at its best during morning sky on the morning of the 6th, and within 3/10 of a degree from Jupiter on the morning of the 5th. But unfortunately, Venus moves from the morning sky to the evening sky for those that love that early morning star. Email me at drskyshow@gmail.com. We recommend theskylive.com. And always remember what, George? Keep your eyes to the skies, as I'm your navigator on the highway to the heavens. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Sky. Makes you want to run out and get a telescope, doesn't it? Okay, take a slow, deep breath. It'll make you feel better. But how come? In a moment, James Nestor joins us. His work, Breathe, the New Science of a Lost Ark. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. James Nestor is a science journalist, author who has spent the last decade researching how humans as a species have lost the ability to breathe properly with grave consequences to our health. We'll talk about that. He traveled the world to figure out what went wrong and how to get it back. The answers, it turned out, weren't found in pulmonary labs, but in the digs of ancient burial sites, secret Soviet facilities, and the smoggy streets of Sao Paulo. His book is called Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art. James, welcome back. You were on our program almost 11 years ago.
Way back when, yeah. Thanks for having me back again.
Tell me how you got involved in this, in the science of breathing.
Well, I never thought I was going to go and write a book about breathing. It sounded like such a mundane and boring subject. But I was sent on an assignment by Outside Magazine to write about these people called freedivers. And I watched from the deck of a boat a man take a single breath of air and dive down to 330 feet.
Wow.
It took him about 5 minutes, and it completely blew my mind. And once I started understanding what freediving was, and I started talking to these other freedivers, they told me that when we harness our breathing, we're not only able to dive to these incredible depths, but we're able to heat ourselves up if we're cold. We're even able to heal ourselves, which of course sounds like complete garbage, but I spent several years at leading institutions talking to the top experts and found out that what those freedivers had told me was absolutely true.
Now, we, of course, breathe naturally, but are we breathing the wrong way?
We are breathing the wrong way. The vast majority of us are breathing the wrong way. And a lot of us think, well, that's impossible because breathing is just this thing that works in our unconscious.
Right. We never think about it.
Yeah, but just like you can eat the wrong way, you can breathe the wrong way. We get most of our energy from air, from breath. And if you're not getting that breath efficiently, you're never, ever really going to be healthy. So, you know, we can last, 2 weeks without food? We can last a couple minutes without breathing. So a lot of us mistake compensation for health. Just getting by is different from being healthy. And if you don't believe me, and I certainly didn't believe this when I first started talking to these researchers, all you have to do is look at the chronic respiratory diseases, which have overtaken the planet right now, from asthma, COPD, emphysema, snoring, sleep apnea, on and on and on.
Well, we just lost Rush Limbaugh last week to lung cancer, which is another tragedy.
That's right. It's becoming so common that we just think having asthma is normal, that to snore is normal. Or having sleep apnea, to choke on ourselves every night is normal, but it's not. And from the skeletal record, we can see that our ancestors very likely didn't suffer from the vast majority of these problems. They breathed differently than we do today.
James, you're going to give us some breathing techniques next hour when we start taking phone calls, but is this something that we can do unconsciously, or do we have to be fully alert when we're breathing this way?
Well, the point is to train yourself to have better habits. So once you do that, you don't have to think about it. You don't want to walk around obsessing over your breath every second of every day. That's not a good way of living.
No.
Breaking a habit can take weeks or months. So you will have to spend some focused time in that period for this to become an unconscious habit. And that's really what it's all about.
What is bad breathing? Give us an example.
You can go out to any street and you'll see bad breathing. Breathing through the mouth, extremely injurious to our health. Snoring, extremely injurious. Having chronic obstruction of the nose, sinusitis, rhinitis. All of this is bad news because when you're breathing through your mouth, you aren't breathing through your nose. And the nose is our body's first line of defense. It filters air, conditions it, it heats it, it moistens it. We get 20% more air breathing, more oxygen breathing through our nose than we do through our mouths. And if you think that's not going to make a difference throughout the day, you're crazy.
Well, why did God give us the ability to breathe through our mouths if we're not supposed to?
Well, why did God give us the ability to, eat 20 Twinkies a day and not eat a balanced diet? You know, we can get by eating junk food our entire lives, probably be a short life, but that doesn't mean
right. We're
healthy. So having a mouth and being able to breathe through that mouth is a wonderful backup system in case your nose ever gets clogged. But you can look at the 5,400 other mammals in the wild right now, and none of them are mouth breathers.
Interesting.
They all breathe through their noses. Think about a horse. You know, even racing, a racing horse is breathing through its nose. Think about a cheetah running at 50 miles per hour stalking prey, breathing through its nose. You think about us, 50% of us are breathing through our mouths as a habit.
So are you saying we should train ourselves to kind of breathe through our nose with our mouths closed? Because you naturally breathe through your mouth when your mouth's open.
That's right. You got it. You got to shut your mouth. I mean, that's just what it turns out to. Our physiology is designed to be breathing the majority of our breath through our nose. And you can look at any anatomy book and see this. It's very clear, but so many of us, present company included here, didn't get this message until very recently.
I wonder how many millions right now as we speak, James, are starting to breathe just through their nose consciously.
I hope it's billions, because if you look at about 25 to 50% of the population are habitual mouth breathers right now. And especially at night, that increases to close to 60 or 70% of us.
Now, you say that the human face and mouth have changed over the past couple hundred years. What happened?
That's right. If you look at an ancient skull, this is something that I spent months and months doing at various labs, you will see perfectly straight teeth. You'll see this very broad jaw, this very powerful face. And this was true for our ancestors 500 years ago, as it was for their ancestors dating back 5,000 years ago to 50,000 years ago on back. We all had perfectly straight teeth. Now think about modern humans. You know, all I have to do is look in the mirror. I've had extractions. I've had braces. I had crooked teeth. Everyone I knew had crooked teeth. This isn't normal that this happened. And this all started changing about 300 years ago when industrialized foods started coming in to our diets and becoming the staple of the foods we would eat day to day.
You've talked about George Carlin, the painter, not the comic, that he lived with the Native American tribes to discover their breathing techniques. Tell me about this guy.
Yeah, so this stuff isn't new. And that's what was so shocking, is to spend so many years looking at the research and finding that scientists and explorers have been talking about this for hundreds of years. So George Catlin was a painter. He was first a lawyer. And in the 1830s, he took off. He got tired of painting governors and other people in high society. So he grabbed a gun, some canvases, some brushes, and he took off west and traveled more miles than Lewis and Clark. And he lived with 50 Native American tribes. And he said the one thing that they all had in common was that they all respected breath as a medicine. They never breathed from their mouths. And this started in infancy. Mothers would hang over their infants. When they were done feeding, they would gently close their mouths. They would watch them as they slept. And if they ever opened their mouths, they would close their mouths. And this was something that not only the Native Americans all shared, but Catlin later on in his life, in his 50s, went down to South America and saw the same exact thing. It's no coincidence that these people all had this very strong facial structure as well.
Why is it, James, that slow, deep breathing kind of makes you feel better? I mean, before you're in a tense situation, or you've seen athletes getting up to, you know, with their bats ready to hit, but they take a deep breath. How come?
Mm-hmm. So if you imagine if you're about to be attacked by a bear or a mammoth or a cheetah or whatever, you're going to start to breathe very fast. And this is just a reflex response, because your body is signaling that you are in a state of stress and you're going to need a lot of oxygen very quickly. But many of us have adopted this heavy, shallow breathing through our day-to-day lives. And so by doing that, we are sending signals to our brain that we are stressed. So most of the messages between the brain and the body come from the body to the brain. So just breathing in a fast, really quick way will send messages to your brain to panic. So you can reboot this by taking this long, deep breath. Mm-hmm. Think about when you're relaxed. Maybe you're in a sauna right before you go to sleep. Your respiration slows down. You take these nice, easier breaths. So we can trigger that relaxation response at any time by taking these slower, easy breaths.
That's fascinating. James, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and chat more about your work, about breathing. Truly remarkable, folks. And then we'll take calls with James next hour here on Coast to Coast. And at that time, he'll share some techniques on how you can start improving your own breathing. I mean, I got to be very honest with you. Until we started seeing his books and his works, I didn't think about this. I thought breathing was just a natural occurrence that happens, and that's the way it is. That's not so, apparently. So we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. James Nestor, our guest. His new latest book is called Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art. And his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. There was a researcher in the 1950s that you've talked about who used to rehabilitate patients with breathing techniques who suffered all kinds of problems. Well, how did he do that, James?
Yes, this was a choral conductor who found a way of training singers to breathe better, specifically by allowing them to exhale more. And he would have these singers, and they would be singing louder. They'd be singing with more vibrance. And he actually was hired by the Met Opera to retrain opera singers who already knew how to sing pretty well. And after doing this for about 10 years, VA hospitals on the East Coast heard about him and said, hey, we have hundreds and hundreds of emphysemics, and they're just sitting here on gurneys with oxygen, you know, up to their noses. And on antibiotics, we don't know what to do with them. So he went in and helped these people who were literally left for dead. And so many of them, by just learning how to breathe properly, walked out of the hospital. And he was active. This guy, Carl Stowe, was active in the 50s and 60s. And I've since heard from a few of the patients that he helped. And they've told me that he absolutely saved their lives. Because, again, we become so conditioned in this modern world to breathe in such an unhealthy way. And our bodies can sort of deal with that for a little while. But after a while, they're really going to start breaking down. And when we relearn this natural ability of breathing, all of these tremendous things can happen.
Does a baby breathe naturally and then change later as it becomes a teenager or an adult?
Absolutely. Check out a baby breathing. It's going to be breathing right into its stomach, right? Taking these very fluid, easy breaths. But at around 5 or 6 years old is when kids start changing their breathing and they start developing unhealthy breathing habits, because that's right around the age when they start mimicking other adults around them. So right when they get the concept of stress and anxiety, and so their breathing changes with that. And there's been many studies that have shown this.
How about the ancients? How did they pick up on these techniques?
Well, yoga is the art of breathing, you know?
That's right.
It's interesting to know that all of this vinyasa flow that they're teaching at yoga studios right now, it's great stuff. I do it. I enjoy it. It has tons of benefits. That's not yoga. That is the yoga that's been around for the past 100 years or so. But yoga is about 5,000 years old, and it started as a technology of sitting and breathing. You weren't doing anything. And so it's that technology that had been developed by some of the earliest civilizations in India and Pakistan, been documented, that is now still around. It's harder to find because yoga is now associated with, you know, cool looking sweats and water bottles. But the original yoga technology of breathing, that's what its sole focus.
The ancient Chinese were into this too, weren't they?
They were. There are 8 books of the Chinese Tao dedicated entirely to breathing. That's it. They warn you of all the bad things that are going to happen to your body if you breathe improperly, and all the good things that are going to happen if you breathe properly. One quote, which I thought was great, I found this book is like 1,200 years old. It says, the breath inhaled through the mouth is called Ni Qi, or adverse breath. Be careful not to have breath inhaled through the mouth. If that's not a foreboding quote right now, you know, I don't know what is, but they were onto this stuff for thousands of years before modern scientists were actually able to measure the effects of nasal breathing versus mouth breathing.
Is it okay to exhale through the mouth?
It's, yeah, you know, so I'm talking about habits here, chronic breathing. Right now, I'm breathing through my mouth, right? I'm talking to you. When I laugh, I'm breathing through my mouth. When I yawn, I'm breathing through my mouth. Perfectly fine. I'm talking about the other breathing that we're doing 95% of the time. So a lot of people have said that when I jog, I like to inhale through my nose and exhale through my mouth. That's all fine, but you're losing 40% more moisture exhaling through your mouth. Because the nose, when you breathe through the nose, you are creating a closed system in your body between your lungs and your airways. This very tightly controlled system. When you breathe through your mouth, whether that's inhaling or exhaling, it's breaking that system. And so you're not able to breathe as fluidly, and your body has to work a lot harder just to get oxygen.
When you're sleeping, James, assuming you're not snoring or you've got sleep apnea, are you breathing through your nose naturally?
Most of us are not.
Uh-huh.
The estimate around 60%, maybe a little more than that, up to 65% of us breathe through our mouths when we sleep. But this is not good. So you can think about when you're breathing through the mouth, you can think about the lungs as an external organ because there's no filtration. There's nothing to stop all the mold, pathogens, viruses, dust, pollution, whatever else is in the air from entering into your bodies. When you breathe through your nose, so much of that stuff is filtered out. So breathing through your mouth at night can exacerbate or in some cases cause snoring and sleep apnea, which is why during allergy season, when everyone's noses get plugged up, snoring and sleep apnea significantly rise.
How do you convince yourself to sleep through your nose, to breathe through your nose when you're sleeping?
It's tough stuff. And this was certainly a problem for me. I've been breathing through my mouth while I was sleeping for as long as I've known.
Sure.
So most people do. I would go to sleep with a huge bottle of water every single night. Didn't matter if I was in a hotel or camping or whatever. I had to sleep with that water next to me because my mouth was constantly dry. And when your mouth is constantly dry like that, it changes the pH, which makes you much more susceptible to periodontal disease and cavities as well. So the way to fix this, and this sounds a little crazy, and it sounded a little crazy to me when I first heard about it until a doctor at Stanford told me that she prescribes it to all of her patients. It's to take a teeny piece of tape, not duct tape, but a piece of tape with a very light adhesive, like a surgical tape, a paper tape. And you take a teeny piece of this and you put it right at the center of your lips. Yes, this sounds ridiculous, but this can help train you to keep your mouth shut so that you can breathe through your nose for that other third of your life.
That's an interesting technique. What is hyperventilation?
Hyperventilation is when we are breathing over our metabolic needs. So most of us can acknowledge now that as a culture, we eat too much, right? But few of us ever think about the fact that we are breathing too much. But that's exactly what's happening. And it's caused by stress. It's caused by mouth breathing. It's caused by other environmental factors, including those anatomical changes to our skulls. So when we breathe too much, we don't get more oxygen. This seems so counterintuitive. It took me a few months to get my head around this, but when we overbreathe, we make it harder for our bodies to get oxygen. Right now, you can feel this for yourself. You can take 10 big breaths. You might feel some tingling in your fingers or lightness in your head. That is not from an increase of oxygen, but a decrease of circulation. That's what happens when we overbreathe, which is why so many people with anxiety and panic tend to have cold fingers or cold hands or to feel this lightness in their head because they're breathing way too much.
How come when you sometimes get up too quickly, you feel lightheaded?
That's blood pressure.
That's a blood pressure thing?
Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
And what about going upstairs, let's say, really fast? And then when you get to the top, you're a little winded sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. That's because your respiratory system hasn't caught up with all of the needs of your hungry cells, which is why that first 5 minutes of working out is so miserable, right? At the beginning of gym class, you're like, how am I ever going to get through this hour? And then 5 minutes later, the respiratory system has caught up. You're fueling all of those cells, and things get much easier. So a way to avoid that feeling winded is to start preparing yourself with your breath, with your respiratory system, before you hit those flights of stairs, before you go into that workout.
James, tell us about the Swami Rama.
So this is a crazy story about this guy who was born in the Himalayas and by the age of 4 was meditating and practicing yoga. And he spent years in a cave just focusing his mind and his breath. And by the early 1970s, he came out west. He spoke like 7 different languages, and there were these stories that he could shift heat around on his hands just by thinking and by breathing. And he could flutter his heart rate just by thinking and by breathing, which, of course, any scientist would say, impossible. We know that that's not true. So he went to the Menninger Clinic, one of the most renowned psychiatry training clinics in the U.S. at the time, and a Navy physicist hooked him up to all of these different machines and found out that he can shift the temperature between his pinky and his thumb by 11 degrees, and he was able to stop his heart. That's what it looked like on the EKG, that his heart was stopped for over 30 seconds. When they went back and looked at the tape again, they found that he didn't stop his heart. He had it vibrating at 300 beats per minute. Sounds impossible. It's all documented, and it was written about in the New York Times.
300 beats a minute? That's like atrial fibrillation times 10.
That's exactly what it is. But he was doing this with his mind. And with his breath, he was doing this consciously. And still today, people say this is medically impossible, except the fact that he was examined in a completely legitimate lab and surrounded by scientists when he was doing all of this stuff.
Is he still alive? He's probably 610 or something.
He has since passed.
Now, of everything you've heard in this field, what is one of the most bizarre stories you've ever heard?
The craziest thing I think I heard was about this one monk that was born 1,000 years ago who developed this breathing technique to heat his body up when he was up in the Himalayas in wintertime. And other monks learned this, and people had talked about it for hundreds and hundreds of years until a Harvard Medical School researcher by the name of Herbert Benson actually went out to the Himalayas. He went to Dharamsala in India and found monks who claimed to be able to do this, to heat themselves up so much so that they could sit in the snow for 8 hours at a time and melt a circle around themselves.
Whoa.
Again, you say, this is impossible, right? This is some new age craziness, except for the fact that a Harvard researcher was there with his whole team and covered these guys in sensors and found that they were able to increase the temperature in their extremities by 17 degrees. And he put them in a cold room. The room was in the mid-50s and put a wet sheet around them, about 8 of these guys. And they were able to dry the sheet with their body heat in a half an hour. And you can see videotape of this. This was written about in Nature, which is one of the most esteemed scientific journals on the planet. So it's all real stuff. And they've been practicing this for thousands and thousands of years.
Now, a 5-degree increase is a bad fever. So they were doing like 15 to higher. I mean, how did they feel?
In their extremities, yeah, because the temperature in their extremities went down significantly. And so they were able to control their breathing. It's called Tummo breathing, to heat their bodies up. And some of your listeners may have heard of Wim Hof. He's a Dutch man. It's 26 world record.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He breathes that way all the time, doesn't he?
That's Tummo breathing. There it is. And if people don't believe it, you can look at the scientific research that he's done. He sat in a bath full of ice for almost 2 hours and suffered no hypothermia or frostbite. And that's supposed to be impossible, but you can see it on YouTube. You can read about it in papers. So,
are there a lot of people, James, doing this on their own? They've just self-learned?
Yeah, there are. And that's a lot to Wim Hof's credit, is he's taught people how to do this, not just as a circus trick, right, to heat your body up, but they've found that learning this breathing technique can bolster your immune function so much so that in a laboratory experiment, they shot these guys up with E. coli, which would make you and me and anyone else extremely sick. They didn't have any of the symptoms when they were breathing this way.
Amazing.
So they were able to stimulate their immune system to fight off this endotoxin within a few minutes.
A lot of people are suffering anxiety because of everything that's distressing them because of COVID and staying at home and things like that. When you have anxiety, you tend to breathe a little quicker as well. Will this help that? Techniques?
Absolutely, because you're conditioned when you have anxiety, when you have panic, when you're stressed out, just as we were talking about earlier on in the show, that is a stress response. That's your nervous system ramping up. And that's what's kept us alive as a species, to be able to do this. We're not supposed to stay in stress all day long. And if you look at the majority of modern diseases, what are they? They're diseases of inflammation caused by chronic low-grade stress. So breathing is the quickest thing you can do to bring down your stress and actually reduce inflammation. You can do this with breathing.
That's amazing. Where do people get your book?
Wherever books are sold, which I guess nowadays is, you know, means online. So it's out and about everywhere. It'll be out in about 32 different countries in the next 6 or 7 months as well.
When you're out to dinner with friends and things like that, I mean, are you still practicing these breathing techniques?
They're so sick of me talking about this stuff that I can't mention it to them. But I am. I carry it around with me. You know, once you learn this stuff, you have it in your back pocket at any time. So depending on the situation, you can use breathing to either calm yourself down or amp yourself up. I mean, this is the quickest way of accessing our nervous system. We may not be able to control our stomachs or our liver or kidney function or our brains, but when we breathe, we can influence all of these different functions in our body. Every single cell is touched by our breath. And we can use that and harness it to do some amazing things.
When we come back, James, let's talk about some of these techniques. And then we've got a full hour of phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.